here. I think we're running a little late, so what I'm going to do is I'm going to go through my presentation, but I would like you guys to interrupt me if you have questions as I go, because I'm really not attached to getting through all of my slides. I'd much rather address what interests you all. So again, in case you missed the introductions, my name is Sierra Ratakina, and I'm here with the Washington State Board of Health and the Governor's Interagency Council on Health Disparities, and I have no relationships to disclose. So these are what I have slides on. We'll get through what we can get through, but essentially I want to just focus on sort of an overview of the framework that we're using in Washington State around health impact reviews, and then maybe we'll get to some of the lessons learned and some of the other issues on this slide as well. So just as a brief overview, a health impact review is an analysis of how a proposed legislative or budgetary change would impact health and also health equity. So the idea with these reviews is that we're looking at the bill or the budget proviso to see, you know, would this have an impact on health? And if so, would it impact different populations disproportionately? So looking at communities of color or rural and low-income communities, older adults, any communities that are currently facing disparities in our state. The statute passed in 2006, and the framework for us is that a request can only be provided by the governor or a legislator. So a state legislator or the governor's office are the only ones that can request these reviews, and once we receive a request, then we move forward from there. So this is a health in all policies approach, or at least a health in some policies approach, so it's a step towards that direction. Eventually, we would like to see this expand, obviously, but it's also a health equity in all policies approach. By statute, and because it is our interest, we're always looking at the impacts on health equity and not just health in general. It can be a state legislator or the governor. So just quickly, I want to talk about how this is different from an HIA, because I think most people are a lot more familiar with health impact assessment. So these are the six main steps of an HIA: the screening, scoping, assessment, recommendations, reporting, and monitoring and evaluation. And the last two steps, reporting and monitoring and evaluation, are very similar between an HIR and an HIA, so I want to focus just on those first four steps for a minute. The screening process, as I mentioned, for a health impact review, it's basically policymakers that are doing the screening. They're deciding what they want us to look at. For an HIA, there's a lot more flexibility. It can be an HIA practitioner, it can be funders, it can be the community. There's a lot more involvement in who can actually do the screening for an HIA than for an HIR. For scoping, by statute, we only have 10 days during legislative session to complete a review, so it's a very fast process, nothing compared to what you would usually see for an HIA. Again, there's a lot of variability in health impact assessment, so I don't want to generalize, but it's usually more than 10 days. So our process, you know, it has its strengths. It's pretty nimble. We can get through them. Last legislative session, we were doing a review every 7 days because that's what the requesters wanted. We had legislators say, 7 days seems fast from a research perspective, but for a legislator, they're like, that's forever. Can't you do these in 24 hours? It's like, you know, so we're trying to sort of get somewhere in between where we want to do really solid, comprehensive research, but we also need to meet the needs of very fast policies track that's going through. So our turnaround's a lot faster. We really have to scope to those main health impacts. For the assessment piece, it's fairly similar as far as looking at the literature, but again, because we have such a fast turnaround time, we don't have time to go out and collect data in most cases. We're just looking at the literature that's already been published. We also don't have the time to have the community involvement. So a health impact assessment would have a much larger community involvement piece, which we've tried to incorporate even with the fast turnaround time because that's so important. So we try to just maintain relationships through the year so that it's not like we're getting requests and then we immediately have to try to do some sort of community involvement in 10 days, which just wouldn't be meaningful. So that's the approach that we've taken, and we try to engage experts and community members to show our logic model at the very beginning of the request so that we can make sure we're going in the right direction, and then also to get feedback on our draft reviews when we have time. So, and then I would say the most pronounced difference between a health impact assessment and a health impact review is that we don't make recommendations. So in an HIA, the recommendations are, it's one of the central pieces. It's often how an HIA is evaluated to see were these recommendations implemented. By statute, we have authority to conduct a review of what the current statute would do to impact health disparities. So we don't feel that we have authority to actually make any recommendations on how that could be changed, but I will say that it's sort of implied when we make a statement about the health impacts, and we also work offline with legislators and the governor's staff to, you know, provide some support outside of what we do for the health impact review. Any questions so far? Okay, I'll move on. Washington State, we did this through legislation. I think other states and other actually local jurisdictions are starting to do this differently. So it doesn't have to be through statute, but it was what worked for us in Washington. So in 2006, the legislature convened a joint select committee to come up with recommendations on how to address health disparities. From those recommendations, they actually passed legislation in 2006, and this book of legislation did a number of things. It created the Health Disparities Council, which we also staff, and it created this statute giving us authority to do health impact reviews. So between 2007 and 2009, the Board of Health did 7 health impact reviews. So it was just a few every year, and they were sort of depending on the fact that legislators knew this tool existed because the statute had just passed. But we learned that, you know, that's not a lot of requests, and so when we started doing these again, we took a little different approach, which I'll talk about in a minute. So 2010 was the last health impact review we did, and then we lost funding just because of the bad budget climate. So for 4 years, we didn't even have anyone in the office to do this work. We were refunded at the end of 2013, and in the last 10 months, we've had 10 health impact review requests. So we've completed 8 of those. So you can see the difference in 11 months, we've done more than we had done in several years before. And I'll talk about how we changed our outreach in order to actually increase demand for this product. Just to give you an idea of the breadth, we're not just looking at healthcare policy. As you all know, health is, you know, impacted by a number of other social factors. So we've looked at education, language access, financial development, health and social services, healthcare, mental health, emergency response, oral health. So it's been, you know, quite a broad spectrum. We actually haven't had any requests on transportation, which, considering that a lot of HAs are on built environment and transportation, that's been interesting to us. So we're really trying to do outreach with the transportation committees. So our major lessons learned from when we were conducting this work before were around our outreach strategies, because clearly we didn't have good enough outreach before, and also on how we formatted the report. So this time when we received funding in 2013, we decided we really needed a different approach. In the past, like I said, we'd been depending on the fact that legislators knew about this tool because they had just passed legislation on it, and also we did outreach through advocacy organizations with the hope that they would then work with their legislators or the governor's office to request reviews. But we knew that we needed to add to that outreach because it wasn't working. So what we did in 2013 when we started this work again is just started meeting face-to-face with legislators. So last interim and going into the 2014 session, we met with nearly 40 state legislators in face-to-face meetings, the governor's policy staff, advocacy organizations, and other community stakeholders like our state ethnic commissions. We went out to the public health community. So we really dedicated a lot of time to making sure that people knew that this tool existed, because if a great policy is not known about or implemented, then it really doesn't have impact. So that was the approach that we took this time around. And I will say it has been a lot more effective. Like I said, we have had 10 requests in the last 11 months, and 9 of those came directly from those face-to-face meetings with legislators. Just sitting across the table from them, and they're like, yeah, I'd like to request a health impact assessment of this bill, where we might not have had that effect if they're having to get a hold of us. They want to just do it really quickly. So the 10th request came from an advocacy organization working with legislators. Yeah. Before. So by statute, it has to be a proposed change. Once it's passed into law, we don't have authority to review it anymore. So we could look at an amendment, a proposed amendment to that law. But yeah. So it's distributed by statute. Once the request is made, it has to become public. So if a legislator wants to make a request, we let them know that, you know, if this is a bill that you're not ready to become public, you probably shouldn't request it yet, because we need to post that we're working on this so we have transparency. And then our distribution process is we post it on the Board of Health website, which I'll share the link with you at the end of this presentation. And then we send out information to our listservs, and we're trying to, you know, get the word out that this is available. Any other questions? Yeah.
How big is your team, and where's the budget coming?
That's a very good question. So the State Board of Health has 8 staff. We have 1 full-time analyst, myself, that works on these reviews. So our capacity is tiny. Again, doing a health impact review a week during our 60-day legislative session, we did 5 health impact reviews in 60 days. I was at or over capacity to actually be able to do that. During the interim, because the statute only says we have to do it in 10 days during session, during the interim, we sort of work with the requester. see when they need it. It's usually before the next session. So for the ones I did over the interim, we had more like 2 to 4 weeks to work on them. So it's like so much time. And from that, so our funding comes through, it's just part of our operating budget. It comes actually through the Department of Health to the Board of Health, which is because we have an interesting setup in Washington. But it's not very much. It's just over $100,000. It basically covers a staff person and then some resources to do a little bit of outreach. So it's not a huge amount of money. And again, we can't look at every policy either, but it is a good start. And for us, we're thinking that this is, as I said, a step towards health in all policies. It's a way to normalize the idea of thinking about health and health equity in policies. So even if we're only doing a few reviews, it's a way to get the conversation started. Yeah. I think that's a very good question. And, you know, I would say most of the people that we're distributing to are advocacy organizations, academic folks, and the policymakers. So I don't think we've done a great job of that, to be frank. But we've also, these are written in language that's for legislators. So that's another issue we've had is, do we need to have a plain talk version of this? Because in 10 days, I don't have time to write something that's catered to a legislative audience who's our primary audience, but also to the community who's so important to have involved and to allow, you know, to give them a tool that the community could then use to advocate that's understandable and accessible. So that's one of the barriers we have found that we've been talking a lot about is, you know, how to make a plain talk version and how to really get it out there. So I'm very open to suggestions if you guys have ideas on how to really, you know, get this work into the community to increase the impact. So I think there was a question in the back also. Yeah. I think those are both great questions. So I have my master's in public health, and I went to the University of Washington and did a program called the Community-Oriented Public Health Practice Program, which is really focused on this sort of fast, rapid analysis of issues in order to quickly become an expert and compile all the evidence. So I think that a public health background is useful. I think anybody that can, you know, do a solid literature review and synthesize that information quickly could do it. It's just the public health background is helpful in that you can read a bill and quickly start to make the connections. But again, we frequently work with other stakeholders, with other state agencies. If we're doing something on education, I'm going to call our Office of Superintendent of Public Instruction. I'm going to reach out to the community, to teachers, to people that are doing this work, because I realize that, you know, I don't have expertise in all of these things. So I think that being able to connect with people is important. And then I'm forgetting your second question already. Oh, yeah. So I think that we do market this as something objective, and I think that that's why we've had demand for it, is that legislators like the idea that we can do an objective review of this, that we tell them despite what the findings are, whether it's a bill you're sponsoring and you want us to look at it and maybe you're not happy with the results, we're going to publish it. It's going to be public, and, you know, what they do with it is up to them. Maybe they just don't want to, you know, disseminate it widely, but we are going to send it to our listserv, and I think that we do have a good reputation in Washington for being an objective voice on this. Yeah.
Have you guys received pushback on any of your findings?
Yeah. We just recently reviewed a bill on a mid-level dental provider, which is very political, and we do receive pushback often from internal and external, because we staff the Board of Health, so we have 10 board members, and then we have 17 council members, and these are all, you know, individuals that are representing different state agencies, different organizations, so there's a lot of interest, although our ultimate interest is to improve health and decrease disparities, but there's also often a disagreement about, you know, how to present those findings and do things, so we have received pushback, and I think that we were really successful in getting good community input for this mid-level provider health impact review. We worked closely with the Washington State Dental Association, with the tribes. We really had a lot of collaboration for this, but at the end of the day, and I took that into account, that feedback, but at the end of the day, we had to stick to our methods in order to be transparent and consistent. So, yeah.
I just wanted to ask, what format are the final documents?
Yeah, I can talk about that. So that's a very good question. And when we had been doing this work before, this was one of our lessons learned. We actually had a sort of a standard state agency type report. And when we started doing this work again this session, we wanted to make it more nimble, something that an audience that includes legislators and the governor's staff would actually use. We knew they weren't going to read a huge report. So our approach this year was to create a one-page executive summary that looks a lot like the bill report that we have in Washington State. So it's something that legislators are used to using, they could easily distribute, and all of our main findings are on that one page. Then following that, we have a logic model that shows the connections, which I'll get to if we have time. And then usually just a few pages of analysis explaining our findings. But then we include annotated references. So there, even though the report itself is very brief, sometimes they're 40 or 50 pages because we attach this basically appendix of annotated references.
Are they available anywhere?
Yeah, they're posted online. So I think I have a link in my slides, but I can get that to you also. So I actually just went through the format, so that was the question that I had. This is just quickly, the logic model that we create is just showing the pathway between the proposal and health impacts. And as you all know, in most cases, there's intermediate outcomes. Very rarely can you find research, finding a connection between something really specific that would be in a bill and the long-term health impact. So we create this logic model to say, for example, here's an education bill. Here is how the bill would actually change education outcomes. Here's how education impacts health, and so on. And so this is the way for us to actually create a visual representation of what the long-term impacts would likely be. And each of these arrows represents a research question that we have to research to determine if that relationship actually exists, and if so, how strong the evidence is that that relationship exists. So it looks like there was a question. Yeah. So we don't generally do cost effectiveness because that's the tool, a fiscal note would do that. So our idea is to be sort of another tool in the toolbox, a health note, if you will. And so occasionally we'll look at economics if it's something that, this is going to impact the economics or income stability of a population and that is going to impact their health. So we would look at it in the sense if it's going to be part of this pathway to health, but we don't really do, we sort of leave the fiscal notes to the other agencies that are requested to do those. Currently, our strength of evidence goes from minimal to very strong, but we are working... Oops, sorry, I talked with my hands too much. Calm myself down. We're working to actually make these stronger because right now we sort of made these on the fly. I got hired at the end of 2013 and we got a request right away, so we were trying to make something that would give us an ability to say how strong the evidence is, but we created them very quickly. So I'm strengthening these right now, and we're actually piloting them with the UW School of Public Health in December. So we'll get an opportunity to see if multiple analysts apply this criteria to the same body of evidence, do they come to the same conclusion about how strong the evidence is. And the idea is that, we're using this within the board for one analyst, so it's fairly easy for me to be consistent. But we want to grow this work. We want other states to do this work. So if in Washington, if we wanted to actually spread this work out to a number of state agencies to do it, we want there to be consistency. We want an analyst, no matter where they are, what part of the country or world, what part of our state, what agency they're in, to be able to apply these criteria and come to the same findings about how strong the evidence is supporting that connection. So this is, I just wanted to give a visual representation as an example of what a logic model would look like, and this is a bill that was sponsored last session to create cultural competency training for healthcare providers, and this is just wanted to show an example. The solid arrows in this are strong evidence, the dotted lines represent some evidence, and then the dashed lines are minimal evidence, which I will say we're changing that language because we got feedback from legislators that they did not feel comfortable using that language, so we're working with some language that would be reflective of the evidence, but also that legislators would be comfortable using. And so, again, if you guys have suggestions, we're open to that now as far as if anybody here is in communications and wants to help me out there. But so this is just an idea of how you can see there are intermediate pathways ultimately getting to health and health equity. Really quickly, in case anybody, and I only have 1 minute left, so I just want to touch on the fact that in case anybody is wanting to bring this to their state or to their local jurisdiction, the main things that you need, as I said, are staff time, and the more staff, the more the capacity. And you have to have some sort of access to the recent scientific journals, and not just healthcare, but also, ERIC, education, all of these other ones. And then expertise, which can be internal, but also external partners, which can be helpful for that. Is there Any questions in the last 30 seconds? Okay, I think I'm just going to wrap up here then. Thank you all for your time.